out of all the things that I was worried about happening here today, it wasn't that I was going to start the seminar near tears. Before we start, though, today is a pretty special day. Outside of us being really nervous about this, it's Michelle's birthday! Being elementary teachers, you cannot have a birthday without a birthday treat. So, if Jen and Linda, I brought birthday treats. We're just going to pass those out to celebrate Michelle's birthday. Should have been life in the trenches, because that's how we feel every day, like what can we do, or how can we help, or what can we learn, because you just want what's best for kids. What can you do to help them increase their skills in reading or increase their skills in writing? And both Michelle and I have, and Erin mentioned that, we are all about trying a new strategy or trying a new teacher tool, even if it fails, and you might hear a little bit of that today, some things that we have tried that have, we felt they have failed, or her students have made it very clear that this is not working for us. But when you're trying new things and you're open to that, you are always looking for experts in literacy who know a lot, who you appreciate, who you have loved the information that they have put out there. Two people that we have really kind of fallen in love with have been Kate Roberts and Jennifer, I'm going to say her last name wrong, Cervallo? Nice, really long last name. And we have just appreciated what they have put out. And so today, when we were kind of thinking about today, we have been digging into some of their books. And so what we're going to do is we're just going to kind of work through some of the resources that they have, some of the tools and strategies that they have given, and how we have used them in our rooms, or how we have tweaked them, or what we have found has worked for us or hasn't worked for us. So, kind of a look at
our work. It was last spring when I was busy on my computer. I should probably preface this with, I teach part-time. And so language arts is totally my thing. I live, I eat, I breathe language arts. I even do language arts during the summer because I'm a reader and I love it. So it was last spring, and I was looking on the laptop at the OAISD website, and I noticed that they were having a reader's ELA like training for 3 days. And I spotted Kate Roberts' name, and I said to Chris, oh, we got to go. So we quick emailed our beloved Miss Erin and said, how can we make this work? And so she did for us, and we were so glad because we learned a ton in those 3 days. It was tiring, but it was well worth it. The first book that I'm going to talk to you about today is Kate Roberts' book, DIY Literacy, Teaching Tools for Differentiation, Rigor, and Independence.
It is a great book. It is a practical book. It's an easy read. It's not one of those that you have to, like, there's a lot of hard words, as my kids would say, or heavy content. It's very light. It's very practical. She looks at this, and she looks for ways to teach us to make our kids more independent, to help them differentiate between their learning. It is a focus on of this book is to empower students and create independence. So we're going to show you some of the things that came right out of this. And one of the first things I'd like to talk about are charts. I love charts. I have always loved charts. I love to write on charts. I love to make charts. I think they're fun. But after reading this book and after being with Kate for those 3 days, I kind of realized that my charts were more for me than they were for my kids. And Kate boils it down to that there's two kinds of charts. There's a repertoire chart and there's a process chart. And the repertoire chart is the one that you choose the skill that you want. You list the things underneath that that you want the skills that you want the kids to learn and the steps and strategies that they need to accomplish that goal. And instead, I used to take my charts and I would write the teaching point on there, and I would write what I think they need to know. So my charts ended up being, no lie, I have some charts as long as this table. Well, I don't know if your room is anything like mine, but where do you go with a chart that's that long? So I have really pared them down. I've got an example of one, and it's dark back here. We're really sorry because with the light, then the ammo didn't work. So we had to, I'll bring it out into the light. This is a chart that I have done different. This is a repertoire chart. Here's the big skill that I wanted the kids to know. This is one that we're working on right now in my classroom. Here is one of the skills that they can use to achieve this goal. Now, these, what I do with these is my kids are doing stickies, and what I like to do is I like to give a really clear idea of how I want this to look in their notebooks. So I'll include, if we're working with stickies, I will make my own little stickies like this. I use the self-stick glue sticks, the movable glue sticks. If you put those on the back of paper at the top, that makes your own sticky note. So then you can make them as big as you want or as small as you want. So anyway, and so I'll say to the kids, this is what it should look like on a sticky. Here's three ways to start it, because we're working with fourth grade. And then I'll hang this, and I'll just leave it in the room. And my partner and I received a wonderful gift from a parent. And we had tack strips put up on the back of the room and in the front of the room. I used to have them on clothesline, but if you know anything about the clothesline, it kind of swoops after a while. So we had our custodian put tack strips up there. So now I precariously climb on a ladder and hang it. And I try to do that when my administrator's gone because it makes him nervous seeing me standing on the top of the ladder. Here's another one. I am not a fancy drawer. I am not an artist. My people do not look like people. And I try to be fast and simple. So here's another one. Eye-catching for the kids. Sometimes I use icons instead of words. And for those of you who teach first grade, kindergarten, icons are great. I have even gone to like Michael's, and the scrapbooking things that you can buy, the large stickers, put them on a chart. You can even, they have ones that look like these little bubble things here, and I've written those on there and stuck them on there too. And just said to the kids, this stands for think. This is think or remember, different colors for things. Some teachers make writing charts in a different shade than they use for their reading charts, just to get the kids looking at different things. An example of a process chart, and this one's old,
one out. I have in my class this year 17 boys and 5 girls. So process charts are huge in my room this year. I've made a lot of process charts. But here's one of what do you do when you meet with your partner? When you put two little boys together, they don't always talk just about writing or reading. So I'm like, all right, dudes, we have to think of something different. Here we go. Talk 3 minutes. That's all you have. And then you get this done and we move on. I've done a process chart for the kids for what to bring to the writer's rug or reader's rug. You always bring a pencil. You always bring your notebook. You bring your thinking head or your thinking cap. Those type of things. It just sets a mood for what you're ready to do. And they look. They remember. They know.
I have one. Chris and I made one for doing post-its. Third and fourth graders aren't used to doing post-its at the beginning of the year or writing on them. So when you tell them to start doing stickies, they don't know what to do. So here we go. Here are all the signs that you use for your stickies so that you don't, even for our kids, I have a couple really low readers and low writers. And so I'm not asking them to write on stickies. I'm asking them, when I collect their stickies, I'm looking for these. Because this is still evidence of their thinking and what they thought on the book.
And sometimes it helps for kids to come up with what they want on their stickies. The last one on there, like I had that chart all nicely made, and by chance I didn't have an opportunity to laminate it before I showed the kids, and the kids are like, well, you need, like, what are you going to do if a character is sad? And I'm like, well, I don't know. What are we going to do when a character is sad? And they're like, well, you need a sticky that has just a face on it with no expression. And then we can give the expression to the character and then write why they're sad or why they're upset. So the poster ended up getting a little longer after they inputted what they wanted on their stickies.
You can even make charts for kids, for certain groups of kids. Like I said, I have 17 boys and 5 girls, and some of them are not into engagement too much. They can read for about 5 minutes, and then we need to go do something else. So this is a strategy that I got from one of our favorite authors that we'll talk about in a little bit. It's called the Reading Goal Ladder. So I said, set a simple goal. Read 7 pages. And stick your sticky note at the end of 7 pages. When you get to that 7 pages, jot a thought. Okay? Read 7 more, jot a thought. These are their rewards for doing that. So they can switch their positions, where they're sitting. Sometimes for a couple of my little antsier ones, I say, even go from your seat to the floor, get a drink, a quick stretch, we do some movements, do a quick retell on your hands. This is what happened first, this is what happened second, this is what happened third. 5 minutes to look at a book, like a picture book. I have lots of picture books in my room. And, you know, I think they just needed that, okay, oh, I can go back and look at a picture book. I can take my mind off my book. And then I said, it's kind of a promise to yourself that you have to go back and start over again. And I was amazed. I said to Chris, I said, the one that I made this for, I actually showed it to the whole class. And I said, some of you may not need this strategy. Thinking, oh, please let the one I'm thinking of. And all of a sudden, I saw that little one go back to the seat and counted 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, both sides. He said, stuck the sticky note, sat down, and he read. He read the whole 7 pages. Did his sticky note, read again. I saw him get up. He went and quick got a drink, and he sat down and looked at a picture book. I'm like, yeah, absolutely, go. So he went and looked at a picture book. It was awesome. I was like, I'm so geeked. I was like, wow, this really worked. So then it's like, what do you do when you have all these posters? What do you do when you're done with a unit of study? Do you keep all those posters up? Well, after a while, your walls will start looking like, I don't know, like an art exhibit.
So another great idea that we got from this book is to have the kids make bookmarks. Make bookmarks of their learnings, what they want to take away from what they've done. So what you do is you say to them, you lay out all your materials, your charts, any handouts you've had, open up your notebooks, mine those notebooks, look at the charts for things that really grab you, that are going to stick with you, that you want to remember. So I did that. I tried that with my kids. And it was pretty amazing how it worked out. Now, we did one together. I always talked about it, and I said, you know, if this is my bookmark, if this is what I want to take away from reading, if these are things that really work for me, here's what I'm going to do as a reader. And I actually made one. And then my kids came up with one. And it is, I did this one out of 8.5 by 11. Kate suggests that you do 6 boxes. So I did 6. I did 3 on one side and 3 on the other. So here are some of the ideas that this little one, and this is one of my girls, I think, came up with. And it says, her first one is stop and jot. And she said, readers, stop and jot. And she even drew the little post-it icons on there to remind her to stop and jot. Here's another one. Readers ask questions. They ask your partner who, what, where, when, why, how. Here's one for book buzz. 1, 2, 3, 4. You think about it, you write it in your notebook, and then you can talk about it with a partner. You book buzz about it. On the back, she says, this one is a little, what to do is to keep post-its that tell about, oh, what to keep. So I talked to the kids about what do you do with all those post-its that you have? What do you have them do? I said, we did a whole lesson on what to keep. Keep the ones that really talk to you about your book, that really evoke emotion or help you remember. So that's what she wrote. She said, keep post-its that tell you about the book. Read books at your level. And she has A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, the whole alphabet there. And then she has retell, tell key events. Oh, hey, that's Levi. Sorry. Now, even my kids that struggle can do this too. I'm trying to hide the name, but I guess it doesn't matter. Only if myself, my friends will know who this is. Stop and jot. Yeah, stop and say, huh? He's got book buzz, LOL, and star for his sticky notes, to read fast, and then to read with feeling. So right now, these are their bookmarks that they're keeping in their books. And then when we're done, what I'll do is I'll three-hole punch them. And my kids have notebooks instead of... they have 3-ring binders instead of notebooks, and we'll put those in our binders. So those are the bookmarks. Another thing that Kate has talked about, and Chris is going to go into this a little more, is a demonstration notebook. And this has been kind of, she's actually played with it more than I have, but when we were at the 3-day seminar, one of the gifts that we could win is one of these big artist sketchbooks. And what they have encouraged us to do is when you make your small groups or when you're conferring with students, sometimes you go, how do I explain this to someone? How do I talk about it? So when you come up with a kid to a child and you're going to confer, you've got this handy-dandy little notebook with you. Up here is what you've done in their style. So like with this strategy I'm talking about is zooming in, telling the important parts. So I wrote, we went to Disney at Christmas. It was a lot of fun. We rode the monorail and went to the castle. We also ate at a saloon. I rode at the front of a scary roller coaster too. It was a lot of fun. Kind of trying to get them into that idea of a small moment story. What can we take out? And then what she asked you give the strategies that you want the kids to try kind of underneath your title for your notebook. So maybe, I don't know if it'll help you to do it better up here, but so in here I've put, find a 10-minute moment. In that story, find a 10-minute moment that you can write longer about. Show off one moment of strong emotion. You know, I said this is a scary roller coaster. Maybe that's something I should focus on because I said it was scary. Or focus on a moment of change. When did you change your mind? The sticky notes are down here for the kids to try it. Take that story, write on the sticky note how you would try it. So you're getting them, you're reteaching a strategy for them or teaching them something new. And at that moment, they get to stop and try it. And then they get to try it again. That's when you would say to them in their notebook, try this again. Now let's see if you can find some place in your notebook where you can try this, or your story where you can try this. And then come back and check. This also brings you something else to confer about when you go back to them the next time. Say, did you try that? Can you show me where you did that? That work that we talked about last week? So I have like zoom in. We've been talking about grow your paragraphs. You know, we stood in line, we got in a car, and then the car started moving forward. So just growing your paragraphs. How can you do that? Well, you can add action, dialogue, thoughts, details. Change it up. Talking about lengthening sentences. This is one that I've been doing with some of my better writers. You know, we ran fast, we ran on the road, we saw things. Okay, it's great what writers do. Writers vary the lengths of their sentences. Writers start sentences in different ways. Have you ever read that story where it went, we did, we thought, we saw, or he said, she said, I said, they said, those said, no, it sounds like a Dr. Seuss book after a while. Or I have changed the wording of a sentence. Can you change it up? So.
We talked demonstration notebooks work nice when you're doing writing and you're moving around and you're conferring and you can do a little quick recap of a strategy and they practice. It becomes a little bit more difficult with reading, I think, because how do you sit down with a quick minute and do a strategy and have them write something out, or at least that's what I was struggling with. And so my year started with, I have some low readers in my room that they're in for the mini lesson and for the work that we do in mentor text. And then I have an aide who does some additional work with them outside the room, making sure that we're just focused in on what we needed. And so how I started my demonstration notebook was putting a strategy on there that my aide would take with her, so that without a whole lot of explanation or a lot of time spent between me and Kim, she could grab the demonstration notebook, she could set it on a table, the kids could work on explaining it to her, and she could work things through with them. And so that ends up being how my reading demonstration notebook looks like. But then it ended up being things like, okay, what if we're working on a retell? I want the kids to do a little bit more work with that. It's a little difficult to have one notebook and three or four kids sitting around a table. And so things just kind of gradually changed. Then my demonstration notebook turned into just quick 8.5 by 11 sheets of paper where I did the strategy, I laminated it, and then there's post-it notes for them to write on. That way you can do a quick little reteach with them. They can take this back to their desk or wherever they're doing their work. They can fill things in or work through things, however you do it, drawing pictures or whatever. And then I can do a quick recheck back with them to see how they're coming on that strategy. But then they have something to take back with them to their seat. And a few readers where it was simply, we needed to work on understanding that there's a vowel sound in a word and a beginning and ending sound. So this became kind of like our mat. And then I just piled post-it notes on the top of them, and they could write the beginning sound, the vowel, the ending sound. And then through some discussion, we're like, well, what about magnetic letters? Now they can just slide the magnetic letters off and on without having to do the writing. And for some kids, that speeds along the process a little bit. So ideally, you know, if you follow what what Kate Roberts is saying, you want your demonstration log, because this is what's traveling with you as you do your mini lessons with kids. But I was finding out that sometimes my kids just needed something to take back with them or something to work off. And so this is what it became for reading. So it's just kind of playing with the idea and changing it up to what I needed in my room. So one of the other things she talks about is microprogressions. And if I have to be completely honest, when we do our on-demands at the beginning of the year, and I take out my progression that I have to like highlight where everybody is, I get a little sick to my stomach. And I will do anything, clean bathrooms, do anything to put this off. So I like the idea of a micro progression, and I kind of played around with it a little bit this year. So my kids did an on-demand at the beginning of the year for personal narrative, and I decided as I quickly read through them, you can start to pick up like what area we as a whole group kind of need some help on. And I just picked one area on here, and I kind of highlighted it through all the stories, found, wow, we are not doing a good job right in a small moment. Interesting, it was a strategy Michelle talked about too. So I looked at where my kids were falling. A lot of my kids were falling on that progression at about a kindergarten level. And so what I then did is I took what it says on the progression at the kindergarten level, and I made that my first box on my progression. Just for right now, pretend this isn't up here. So I wrote that down here, and then I picked the first grade writing, second grade, third grade. Ideally, I only really want three on here, but because of where my kids were performing, I started here. And then I talked to my kids about, before I even showed them, I said, have you ever heard like of a five-star restaurant, or, oh, this is five, you know, what does that mean? And they understood that. And so I said, if we're thinking about writing, we want this to be our five-star writing. So then we just moved to four-star, three-star, two-star. And then we sat down together as one of our writing lessons and said, okay, what does two-star writing look like? And then I picked a story about us getting a puppy this summer, which they're really interested in, partly because I had said we weren't going to get one, and now we have one. So they thought that would be a really good story to write. And I wrote it to fit this level on the progression. And what they started to say is like, oh, that's kind of a boring story. I'm like, oh, so I wonder how we could change it if I tried to do this. So I rewrote the same story, but tried to fashion it after this one. And then we moved our way up. And it seemed funny to me, like, that they wouldn't know what that looks like. But I think often we kind of throw it out there to kids, but they have to like see it and work through it with you to really understand what that looks like. And it's kind of fun to listen to them as they're doing their own writing now, like, oh, this is kind of boring. I bet that's like a two-star writing. What could I do? So it's something that they can refer back to. That made me a little curious about what to do with reading, because that is something a little different. So as Michelle and I were talking about this, I thought, oh, I better try it before we come here. So I looked at my teaching points, and predicting was coming up. So I have some reading progressions that we had come across. Writing Pathways is a great book that has progressions in it for writing that are kid language, kid friendly.
still working on Aaron to get us writing reading pathways, because there's another one that has reading progressions in them, but I like them because they're kid friendly.
Do you want to show Chris?
Yep, I have it tabbed where one is. So I looked at writing and I looked at predictions, and I decided for predictions I was going to keep it to 3. So I took the second grade level, the third grade level, and then I put fourth grade on there. I do not refer to it that way when I talk to kids, ever. I always refer to it as 1-star, 2-star, or 3-star. Never, ever do I put a grade level with it.
Okay, so this is what an information writing checklist looks like for like a third grader that would be in there for them.
And those you can, I think you can copy those off.
If we own the book, right?
Okay, yeah, we can copy those off if you own the book. or you can maybe sort of change the language just a little bit when you put it on a micro progression. I talked to the kids about making predictions. I read a little bit out of our mentor text, and I had them write a prediction. Wrote a prediction. Student shared it, and I said, "Wow, that's like a 1-star prediction. Like, that's great." And I put it up on my chart, and they were like, "Oh, that's a 1-star prediction." I'm like, "It is. Do you want to know what a 2-star prediction looks like?" Well, yeah. So I read it, kind of explained it, and they're like, "Oh, so really to make it a 2-star prediction, we just have to tell why we made that prediction, like what evidence in the story helped us make that prediction?" I'm like, "Yeah." Immediately, without me saying anything, I think 3/4 of my class went right back to their clipboard and started changing their predictions. Read a little bit more out of the mentor text. I said, "Now aim for a 2-star prediction." And they wrote it, shared it. The goal for them was to get it up on the chart for some reason. They wanted their post-it on the chart. And then one of my little ones sitting next to me is like, "Well, what does a 3-star prediction look like?" And I said, "I just don't think we're ready." No, we are ready. We are ready for 3-star. So we read it through, and they're like, so now I need to make a prediction. I need to tell why I made it, and I need to connect it to a character trait. Is it because they were honest? Is it because they were adventurous? And they started to do that immediately. And it was just interesting to me that this is probably where we would have stayed making predictions unless we had worked through it. And it was interesting because even as I was conferring that day, some of the kids were like, "Could we look at my prediction? Because I think I have a 2-star, but I'd like to make it a 3-star. I'm like, "Oh, yeah, we can talk about it, you know." And they quickly, some of my kids were like, "Oh, I just need to add a couple of words, and that's what makes it a 3-star? Yup. And so it drove them without a whole lot of effort on my part to make even better predictions. So, I'm loving them, but with any tool, you can't use it too often because then it loses its power. So there was part of me that was thinking, okay, if I do a micro progression, my first 2 units in writing are personal narrative. I'm probably good there. I could probably do a micro progression for informational writing and then one for opinion writing. I'm probably not going to do more than 3 progressions in writing. 3 micro progressions. Probably the same thing for my reading. Because the more you use it, the less power you have in it. So if you're thinking about trying a micro progression, pick a skill that you think is going to carry them through for a while, not just like a one-time deal. Because they'll work better that way. Let me take a peek at along with that, there is, Kate Roberts has, if you search up DIY videos, they have a slew of videos online about some of these things. I don't know for you, but for me. I kind of like to see someone working through it or talking about it first before I try it. There is a slew of them online that works really good. So just take a peek, check it out. So we were going to do questions, but we do have some other stuff. I mean, we got like 20 minutes. So you just want us to kind of hammer through it and just, okay, let's hammer through.
Oh, okay. I can hammer. Another great, great, oh my. I could almost be a little sputtin here, but I won't. A really great, awesome tool. I just can't. If I was one of my kids, I would say, it's the awesomest. By Jen Sarabello, reading strategies book. And heads up, she's coming out with a writing strategies book.
And if you go online on Facebook and you like friend the whole reading strategies group that's on there, because there's a reading strategies community, there is a little place where you can sign up to get first dibs on a writing strategies book. Like, you can like order it while it's on the way to the printer. So
yep.
Yeah,
and
I think my name might be in three times. Yeah, but this, I want to make sure that
we went and heard Lucy Calkins in Chicago last year, and of course that was awesome. We're being geeky. We got our picture taken with her and everything, and I had to tweet it out, and she tweeted it out. So anyway, but this was one of the books that they were raving about at the conference that we were at. Hers were not out yet. This was before it was printed. And mine came at Christmas. Get that. Isn't that great? It came at Christmas, and I said, this is going to be my Christmas read. And of course, I had to tweet to Jen Cervello about it, and then she liked it. I'm so geeky with that tweeting thing. But anyway, because the question would be, well, this is great. What about small groups? Now what do you do? Jen has done an awesome job of setting up strategies and giving us strategies for all kind of the literacy levels. So if you're teaching kindergarten and even first grade, supporting pre-emergent and emergent readers. And she gives you a list of strategies to try with the kids. A list. And they're and then she not only just gives you the list, but she gives you the goal of why we do it. She will give you posters or charts that people have tried.
That you can copy.
I mean, some of these are not mine. I'm gonna be honest. I will chart steals. She gives you the strategy, she gives you the teaching tip, she even gives you some of the prompts to use with the kids. As you get farther on, so she has teaching fluency, then she has supporting comprehension. If you do Fountas and Pinnell testing, how many of you do the reading? Okay, Fountas and Pinnell, you know how there's the within text, above text? Okay.
Beyond text, yeah. About text, within text.
And above, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Here's your within text. Here's a lot of your strategies that are above text. Here are all the ones that are even going beyond. Okay? And she puts them. She puts them according to levels. So, like, here's two. I've actually tried this one. I've worked through this one with some of my kids at school. Two-sided problems. Who is this for? Well, this is for levels N through Z. All right? Genre is fiction, the skill of determining importance. I put this in part of my reader's demonstration notebook. I kind of set it up the same way with the book that we were using for a read-aloud, gathered my little munchkins around me, and said, hey, this is what we're going to think about. I've even played with this with my high-level readers, the ones that you go, oh, thank you, I don't have to worry about them, they're just going to go on, and they're awesome, they're just great little guys, so we're going to just keep going with them.
But there are things for them too that I say, hey, you know, I taught this strategy to the rest of the class. There's one I want you to try. You know, try something for like Q through Z if you're pushing toward, or here's one for R through Z, talking about prior knowledge of historical fiction. Okay? Try this instead of what we were doing in class. So go to your administrator, go to your parents and say, this is what I want for Christmas or for my best friend. This is what I need. This seriously is just one of the best things that I think has come out in a while. So.
And it's set up in a way, like when Michelle showed it, it had like goal one, goal two, goal three. It really is set up in a way of how readers learn. So if you're like working with a kindergartner, you're not gonna jump into goal 7 or 8 because developmentally they're just not there yet. And so one of the things, I'm kind of jumping in here on Michelle. One of the things, if you become part of that Reading Strategies community on Facebook, one of the things that Jennifer Cervallo did is, and I don't know that you can see it very well because it didn't print off very well, but it's kind of a self-reflection tool for kids. And you can go through and, so like the first one is like, I have an easy time getting started to read, and your kids mark it. Yes, kind of, no, never. And you kind of work through the whole thing. Now I'm thinking if you were lower elementary, you might not get through all the way to the bottom. But if you're looking for a place to start in this book for your kids, once they work through this self-reflection tool, the first area you'll kind of see it's broken up into all the goals of the book. Once you get to a part where they have circled no, never for the first time or even kind of, you know that you can start in that goal part of this book. It kind of, it helps kids reflect on their reading, but it helps you get a, if you're not sure where to start with them or where they are, it's kind of a neat tool.
And if you're going to use the Fountas and Pinnell, I know Chris, I'm kind of jumping into this a little earlier than what we planned, but are you going to use Fountas and Pinnell? This is not the one I'm looking for. This is one of my little people. And I went through the Fountas Pinnell and I checked, you know, what mistakes they were making, what kind. And he's actually a very strong comprehender, but his fluency is just not there yet. So I have actually started in this book and gone back to some of the emergent and ready readers just to get him back into that spot. So a great way to use this with your Fountas and Pinnell. Also, I have for a small group that I pull once or twice a week, I looked at the comprehension piece. And within text, all right, great. A lot of my kids are stuck at this beyond the text. This is where we're getting our ones and our twos. That's where I picked up for them in the strategy book, and I'm pulling just small group strategy kids together. So,
another book by Jennifer Cervallo that we've kind of we're looking at and playing around with is the Literacy Teacher's Playbook. This one is for grades 3 through 6. She does have another book that is made that is more highlighting K-2. A lot of the same kind of material in it, it's just where it's geared towards. One of the quotes in the book that kind of describes the purpose of the book was, it says, this book is about being empowered by data and assessment, not bogged down by it.
Empowered by data.
Woo! We kind of added that because Aaron's here. A lot of the book is about gathering information about your students using the 5 lenses to look at a reader or look at a writer. And so we had started this as part of a class, and it's been kind of fun to play around with and to get information on. One of the lenses is engagement. And so
a couple of things that I've tried this year, and maybe some of you have already tried it, an engagement inventory. So all I did was at the top, I just put intervals of about 5 minutes because, quite frankly, that was really all I could handle, and I didn't think that the kids were going to be writing more than 15, 20 minutes. I put their names down the side, which I covered up for obvious reasons. And then there was a little code at the bottom, C for chatting, E for engaged. You can kind of see. And all I did was, as they were writing their on-demand, I just kind of walked around, and at 10:35, I just kind of checked. I did a quick little jot about what they were doing, and usually by the time I got through the class list, it was about time to check again, and went through and did it. And it was interesting to me, because I sometimes have trouble focusing in on what everybody's doing. It seems like there's one or two kids that kind of catch my attention, and then I kind of get caught up in making sure I know what they're doing. And this kind of gave me a quick look at what my whole class is doing. Were they engaged? Were they looking around? Were they not staying on task? Were they talking to a neighbor? Were they getting instructions? So that was just kind of a neat, it's a piece of information. And I think often when we're looking at readers and writers, it's a piece of gathering information that I might have looked at this and gone, oh, there were two students in there that probably wouldn't have caught my eye right away of what they were doing, and now I've got them on my radar.
And this is where I got this chart, this reading goal ladder, was because I noticed how many, you know, I had 3-4 of them that were not engaged. So that was actually a strategy that I got out of Jen's book. So.
Another thing they talked about was doing an interest inventory. I pride myself in thinking that I know my readers pretty well, like what they like to read. Like, I could go into my library and go, I think you need to check out Basket 47 because there's going to be something in there that you like. I like being able to do that. And so I did an interest inventory, which was fun to do at the time. But as I was going through them again last night, I kind of giggled because now that we've been together for 6 or 7 weeks and you've gotten to know their personalities a little bit more and I've done running records on them, I can go, oh yeah, I know what you're... So do you like to read? Yes and no. How much time do you spend reading? Not very much. This is what I thought was interesting. Do you get books from the library? Yes. But I don't read that. What books do you like to own? And this I thought was really interesting. I don't know what books I like. And so all of a sudden I'm thinking, oh, I need to kind of tap into this little one because they don't even know what they like. Like, when they look at my library, they don't even know where to begin because they don't know what they like and what they don't like. So I need to start pulling some books that are a variety of things for him to try. This one I like only because it gave me a giggle. What third grader would write that their favorite television program is the Andy Griffith Show? I just thought that was fun. This one I thought was good. Do you like to read? No, because there's just something about it. But when I flipped it over, what does the word reading mean to me? It means work. And that tells you a whole lot about that little kid. And as it turns out, when I sat down with her and talked with her about her reading, English is one of two languages that she knows. Okay, so those of you who are going to know this student, she is most comfortable with Hebrew. That is where she learned to read. She can write Hebrew just because of where she grew up. So here, coming into English, she told me flat out, English is just hard. Like, it doesn't make any sense. And so we just picked a strategy. Like, you're doubting yourself all the time when you're reading. Let's just... when you're reading, does it sound like what a book would sound like? And she's like, that's all I have to think about while I'm reading? Yeah, just think about that. Noticeable difference the next time she read to me. But it was just interesting because, yeah, it would be a lot of work if you were trying to flip between those two things. So, reading logs. here will be one of my biggest failures this year. So I thought, oh, what a great idea, these reading logs. They are fabulous. Kids could keep track of their reading at school and their reading at home. What little third grader wouldn't want to know that? None of them. Not a single one in my room really cares. And so we tried. And it was, sometimes it was the simplest thing, like home or school. Just circle, H for home, S for school. Just tell me where you're reading. No, that didn't work at all in my room.
Fourth graders can't do that, just so you know.
Starting page, finishing page, minutes read. I think, so my kids did pretty good with that. But what they didn't like is the conversations we were having afterward. Like, I'm like, oh, so I'm looking at this and you started on page 1 and you read to page 95 and you read for 15 minutes. Like, you were reading like really fast. Like, can you tell me what that was about? Well, I'm like, you know, usually when you're at the right, when you're reading a good fit book, it takes you about a minute to get through a page. Really? Yeah, really. And then it became they would hand in their reading log and one little boy would say to me, this is what I just want you to know. That this was an information book, and I was really just reading the captions and looking at the pictures, so it will look like I read a lot of pages with not a lot of time. I just want to make sure that we're, I'm like, good. But it also let me see kids who were reading 5 pages, and it was taking them 25 minutes. Okay, those then become little conversations that you can have with kids, too. It was interesting so we've worked our way out of these logs gradually, and we're not tracking our minutes at school anymore. But my kids, we had devotions the other day, and it was about making mistakes and learning from your mistakes. And my kids were like, so kind of like those reading logs that we did. Yeah, exactly like those reading logs. Thank you, though, for mentioning it. Some of the other lenses deal with print work, fluency, comprehension, and Michelle kind of tapped on those with running records, looking at that.
I did reading inventory too. Mine looks, sorry. No, mine looks a little different. It's not very pretty. Do you like to read the newspaper? They all looked at me and went, what? Yeah. I kind of took that one out of here. So that this is like, do you like to read? Kind of. How much do you spend reading? 20 minutes. What are some of the books you've read lately? Boxcar Children. But down here is the part that I've really used. I asked the kids to put a check mark next to the kinds of reading you like best and topics you might like to read about. And I said, what I started doing, I had never done this before, I started checking their book boxes to see how many books they had in there, because I had a lot of kids that said, I'm done with the book, can I shop now? Can I shop while everybody else is reading? I'm like, no, this is reading time. I have invented the book fairy. The book fairy looks at reading inventories and sees what kind of books they like. And the book fairy goes to the library, grabs books, and drops them in their boxes. And then leaves a nice little star that says, you've been visited by the book fairy. And so I had some of the kids come, one of them, the little boy came with a, what's a book fairy? And why don't they leave money? Totally different. But I've also introduced my kids to some new books that they would have never tried otherwise. I had a little girl, I put Spiderwick Chronicles in her book
in her box, and she said, "This is awesome. Is there more?" I'm like, "Oh yes, there's so many." Go to the library. Go find. So that's been a really fun thing. I do reading logs. I only count minutes at home and pages read, and I do quite similar that Chris does. Is anyone in here familiar with Bookopolis? How do I have time?
Oh my goodness, Kate Roberts.
Do I have time or not?
Yeah, go. Yeah. You have like 3 minutes.
Oh! In case you don't know, I am not a technology person. Dan Voss was in here and he was actually kind of laughing at me because he's like, "You actually want a computer?" I'm like, "Yeah." Okay, Bookopolis is a great site. If we can get it to come out. Yep. Where my kids now, we have one-to-one iPads, but Bookopolis is a great site for teachers also. Because what I have my kids do now is they take their reading logs to school every morning and I have them log into Bookopolis. And what's the beauty of this for teachers is I go in here and down the side I can choose a view a class snapshot or monitor student work. Which is this the one I want? Yep. I go to reading logs and I say display a summary for a week. I pick the third. I search. And voila. I have down here the total number of what pages they've read and how many minutes that they've read for that week, and they've clocked it. I can also see who is not checking in on Monday, Tuesday, Friday, Saturday. Okay? And I also can download this and print it in a spreadsheet that I can keep for a record in my own record book.
It works better on laptops it than it does on iPads. I kind of abandoned it, as great as what the site is, I abandoned it last year at third grade because my kids, there wasn't enough patience built up in my third graders that when you touch something that it took a little while to load, so they were touching, and they were wondering why it wasn't popping up. Well, I was trying to do like 15 things before.
You can also view their world where they will put books that they have read, so you can count in your class how many books you've read for a 9-week period total with the kids. They have bookshelves where they can earn badges. They also can put books on shelves that say, "I've read this book, I want to read this book." Bookopolis will give them book ideas based on what they've read before. So I would highly encourage you to play around with it. It's kind of fun for the kids, and it gets them into their iPads, and they love that too. So
we talked about the playbook. One thing that I had mentioned was having like an aide or like Title I person come in. One thing that I had started this year was, and this is right out of that playbook, it's a note-taking form. And so I put the student's name, the date. I write here what I want my aide or my Title I person to work on, and they give me a whole bunch of notes. I have even gone so far as just making a copy of the strategy right out of the strategies book, sticking it in there with the materials, and she knows that she can grab it. The thing that I have found is very nice about this is if we're working with students who are struggling, we have to document everything that we're doing with them. It's all right here. It's just all part of my plans. I write in the plan for that student that day. My aide or my Title I teacher tells me what they did and what they noticed. And everything is documented. So when we sit down in a data meeting and they're like, "What strategies have you worked with? What are you doing?" I can just lay that right there and go, "These are the things that we did, everything stated, when we started, how long we've been working on it." That I have found has worked slick. So
that's all we have for you. So thank you.